Good morning, everybody. Welcome to church this morning. Great to see you. For those of you who are here as visitors or guests, you are especially welcome. Music team, come and join us. Let's be ready to come to worship this morning. Our first song is one of my favourites. It's a new song made popular a few years ago by a team called City of Light. It's a song called Only a Holy God. And it reminded me of words in Chronicles that we read as we start our worship this morning. Would you stand with me? Let's stand as we come into the presence of God, and then we're ready to sing after we've sung this song. It says, "For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and joy are in his dwelling place. Let the heavens rejoice. Let the earth be glad. Let them say among the nations, the Lord reigns. Let us give thanks to your holy name and glory in your praise." Let's do that as we sing together, Only a Holy God. And it's good to have Alice back after her holiday over in the States, and she's going to come and read our Bible reading this morning from Daniel chapter 6. Thanks, Alice.
It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever." The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered, in accordance with the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God just as he has done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days anyone who prays to any god or human being except you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God whom you serve continually rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him. He could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God.
That is probably one of the best known stories in the whole Bible, isn't it? Not many people wouldn't know the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Even if people don't go to church or Lighthouse or Sunday school or a children's club, most people somewhere will have known of the story of Daniel in the lion's den. It's kind of in the lore of people, the way they talk about a lion's den situation. So we're not going to look this morning specifically at the details of the story. What I'd like us to do is to draw out some of the lessons for us and to see how do we excel in a crisis? Because there's no doubt that Daniel was in a crisis. You're going to face a execution, because that's what he was, that's what it meant. And he did it well, didn't he? The way he faced it. So we're going to see how do we excel in a crisis. Let me just give you the background so that we know where we are in the history of things. The Babylonian Empire that had taken the Israelites from their own country across to Babylon in exile has fallen to the Mede and Persian Empire. And Darius the Mede is now the king. So there's a new king. This is actually the third king that Daniel has served under. You may remember there was Nebuchadnezzar. We've spoken about Belshazzar. He's come up last time. And now we're in the reign of Darius the Mede. He's the king. Daniel has been at the top of his profession in the civil service, effectively the civil service, in all of those kings. He's now 80, maybe 90 years old. He's an unashamed follower of the God of the Jews, Yahweh, our God as well. And he's being retained by Darius as one of his most trusted advisors and confidants. His reputation and advice and integrity and trustworthiness was such that that Darius made him the prime minister of the whole country. So he's really gradually stepped up, and as a fairly old man, he's given this incredible responsibility. He's in charge of the whole government. Now, he's not a native-born Mede. He's not a native-born Babylonian. He's a Jew. And this doesn't go down too well with the locals, the other advisors and workers in the government. They, in their jealousy, set out to discredit Daniel and to bring him down. They conduct an exhaustive background check to try to dig some dirt on the man. Something from his past that they can use to accuse him of impropriety or why he shouldn't be in this position. But they can find nothing. There were no skeletons in Daniel's cupboard. Frustrated, these jealous officials resorted to trying to trap Daniel through his religious convictions. Before they do that, or as they do that, they appeal to the king's vanity and ask him to sign off an edict that says that no one is to pray to any other god or to any other human being other than the king. And Darius, being the king, being a bit vain himself, signs it off, not realizing that in doing so, he's signing the death warrant of his man, Daniel. Result of breaking the king's new law about praying would be that the person who breaks it would become lion's lunch that day. Doesn't take Daniel's enemies too long to find him guilty of breaking the law, because Daniel's, and we'll refer to this in a few moments, Daniel's practice was that three times every day, he would go and unashamedly pray to God. And his integrity, his belief, his conviction, his commitment to God was such that he was not going to stop that because a king had told him that he couldn't. And so he carries on. And of course, the enemies, his enemies, are that's exactly what they were hoping that he would do. And so they're straight into the king. And king, you said that this was the case. Yeah, I did. Well, Daniel has been praying to his God and not to you. And there's only one result from that. He needs to become lion's lunch. The king is devastated. He tried his best to get Daniel off, but there was a thing in those days, once a law had been passed in that particular empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, it didn't change. Sometimes I think we wish that that would be the case in our day, that people would be held accountable to rules rather than having them bent one way or another, but let's not get into politics. In those days, that's how it was. And so Daniel is taken and he's put into the lion's den. What I find interesting in the way that this story is written is that the focus of the narrative isn't actually on Daniel. And if you noticed it as Alice read it through, as you read it on the screen, that the focus of all of this is actually on Darius, the king. It's Darius and not Daniel. Amongst the conniving and the plotting and the condemning, it's the king that gets agitated. It's the king that gets wound up. It's the king that spends a whole night worrying. Whereas Daniel, it seems, passes through it all with a serene calmness. And the morning after, early in the morning, the king rushes down to the den to find out what's happened with Daniel. He's concerned, he's agitated, he's all unease. And Daniel is like, it's okay. You know, God's got it under control. And his reply when the king asks him, my God sent an angel, shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done anything wrong before your majesty. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And what Alice didn't read, just because it's quite a long reading, but where do you stop the story? What she didn't read was the fact that the enemies of Daniel then were thrown into the lion's den, and before they'd hit the ground, they'd been torn to pieces as a nice lion burger. How, here's the question. How did Daniel manage to have that? What was it that enabled him to stand strong against that pressure? What was it that enabled him to maintain his integrity, to keep doing what was right, to keep putting God first? What made the difference between him and King Darius? Well, I think it's a really important question, because in our own ways, we all face at different times our lion's den situations, don't we? Times when humanly we're in a situation when all seems lost, where humanly it's helpless. It might be family situations. It might be relationship problems. It could be health issues. It could be a financial crisis. It could be a recurring sin and an addiction that you think you'll never be able to conquer. And you wonder, whatever situation it is, you wonder if it can ever change and how you'll ever get through it. It's human to be in those situations. If you're stuck in one of those, you're not abnormal. You know, you're amongst a group of people that all feel it. As I've often said, that church is not a rest home for the perfect. It's a hospital for recovering sinners. And we all have our struggles. And life isn't easy. Just because we become to follow Jesus doesn't mean that everything is going to run smoothly thereafter. In fact, Jesus said, if you follow me, you will go through trials. You will find it difficult. You will be persecuted. You will have tough choices to make. And we don't stop being humans. We don't stop having relationships and finances and all of those things that trouble us. So let me just say this here, you know, to you with great love and heart. Don't ever feel you're the odd one out if you're struggling. And I would want to say to you, don't struggle alone. You know, there's others of us here that will understand and would love to care and support. One of the things I'm here for is pastor, and Paul is along with us as well. You know, we're here to love, care. It's not about condemning, it's about supporting. It's about helping. It's about praying. It's sometimes it just needs somebody else to bring a little bit of perspective into things. Or sometimes it's just sitting alongside. You know, when you're on the ash heap, you don't want people always trying to spout off wisdom. Poor old Job in the Bible had that, didn't he? And the people that were trying to advise him just made it worse. Sometimes you just want somebody to sit there and say, yeah, let's cry together. Let's weep together. Let's walk through this hand in hand. Let's do it together, yeah? So, but how do we do that? What do we learn from Daniel to help us? I'm going to just give you four things here that I think will help us through this, that we can learn from Daniel's example this morning. So number one, Daniel, well, this is the overall thing. Daniel excelled because he was prepared. That's the big thing on here. Daniel managed to get through this. He was able to be what he was and do what he did because he was prepared. And there's four ways in which he was prepared. The first one is because he had consistently chosen character over comfort. He'd chosen character over comfort. In verses 4 and 5, it tells us that they could find nothing against him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, we'll never find any basis for charges against this man unless Daniel, unless it's something to do with the law of his God. He was known and discovered to be a man of impeccable character. When his enemies dig, there are no skeletons to pull out of the cupboard, if I can mix my metaphors. There was nothing to embarrass him in his past. You see, and that didn't just happen. That was the result of a lifetime of integrity. It wasn't that Daniel realized what was happening and quickly went and deleted his search history. It wasn't because he went and deleted a whole batch of emails that might incriminate him. This was because he'd lived a life of integrity. And we've seen this consistently throughout our series, that throughout his life and the life of his friends, they'd made choices to do what was right. In chapter 1, we saw how he stood up against an edict to eat a particular diet that he felt that it could cause him to contradict his conscience before God, and he said no. And God stood by him and justified that conscious decision. He took a stand, and it was a marker for the rest of his life, the way he lived. And here he is in his 90s, and he's still doing the same, and his enemies can't find anything against him. I think that we're living in a time when it's very easy to compromise in our integrity just a little bit when no one is looking. We can undermine others. We can stretch the truth of what we say just a little. We will tell a little white lie to get us out of a muddle. We'll hold information when we really ought to give it. Or we'll linger on a web page a little too long and look at something or think about something that really doesn't do us any good spiritually. Or we'll scheme or we'll criticize in an email. In our homes, it's so very easy. Oh, when we're here, we you know, how are we? Great, put our smiles on, you know. I'm not saying we do it deliberately. And there's a lot of the time it's not appropriate to say what's really the case, but we come here and we can look respectable and we can act respectable. We go home. Oh, man. When our children were young, I used to get to church early because they just wound me up every Sunday morning. And I'd get cross and I'd get grumpy. And then I'd go to church. Good morning, everybody. Lovely morning, isn't it? You know, and you're thinking, I've just been grumbling at my children. And it wasn't their fault. That was me. How many of you come to church when your children were younger? Maybe that happens now. And you come into church and you're having a right old grump in the car. And you're telling the children, listen, you're having a go at that. And you're having a word with the side passenger here or the side passenger there, and you come into church and it's all sweetness and light. It's life, isn't it? And I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying that those that's what happens. But the point is, at home we can be different to what we are when we're together. We can compromise in our language. We'll use language outside that we'd never use in church or with Christian people. Our attitudes can be a little bit different when we're not with our Christian friends and colleagues. It takes courage to be men and women of integrity, especially when no one's looking. Daniel chose character over comfort. I wonder if people looked in our recycle bins, if they were flies on the wall at home, what they would see, what they'd hear. They couldn't find anything against Daniel. If we're going to excel in a crisis, we need to be making those choices to do what's right now and not just leave it. That's the first one. The second one is that he chose faith over expediency. Faith over expediency. Courage, a stiff upper lip is one thing, but that and raw courage needs to be bolstered in a crisis, doesn't it? And the source of Daniel's courage was found in the very last verse that Alice read to us. Verse 23, it says that he trusted in his God. The king was overjoyed, gave orders for Daniel to be lifted out of the den. When Daniel was lifted up from the den, no wound was found on him because he trusted in his God. He chose faith over expediency. His life, throughout his life, he'd learned from personal experience to trust God. God could be trusted. Do you know in your life that God can be trusted? I know the Bible says it, but do you know in your life? I've been encouraging us recently through a whole range of reasons. It's good to encourage each other to be able to share our stories of where we've realized that we can trust God. I'm so grateful for a number of you that have come up and said that. We're going to be hearing about it. We'll hear a bit from Becca next Sunday evening. In the weeks that follow, we'll hear other times where people have proved that. But we've got to make a start. You've got to choose faith over expediency. We live in a time when it's just so easy to do what we feel. But we've got to do what is right, not just what feels good. And we've mentioned one about the eating of the food, but Daniel had seen it when, in interpreting the dreams, he'd put his life on the line when he interpreted the dreams at different times. When his friends went in the fiery furnace, he'd done it when the writing was on the wall and he interpreted it, and it all came true. The point was he'd taken God at his word and he'd lived on it. He'd stepped out in faith. Said it before, say it again. If we're going to find God, we have to step out of the boat. We have to take him at his word. The old Israelites, when they went into the promised land, the leaders, the spiritual leaders, had to put the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders. And when they got to the River Jordan, that was probably half a mile wide because it was in flood, God said, when you get there, you have to put your feet in the water and then the waters will part. And that's exactly what happened. In our lives, we have to put our feet in the waters. We have to choose faith. If God has said something to you, is speaking to you in your life, do it. Take him at his word and you will see him open the waters before you. Trust him in the small things now so that when the crisis comes, you will be ready. Don't wait until then or you won't be prepared. It could be time. It could be finance. It could be in honesty. It could be with your priorities. Put him first. Test him and you will be ready. Choose faith over expediency. The third one was that he chose discipline over disorder. He chose discipline over disorder. His enemies knew that he was a man of personal discipline. They knew that every day he went and prayed in front of his window. So that was why they got the king to sign off the law as they did. Important to notice, Daniel didn't start praying when the crisis came. How often we do that, don't we? Something happens, oh, I'll pray. We should be praying beforehand as well. We need to make it a habit. It needs to be part of our personal discipline. It's like these guys who, you know, Trevor and Pete and Courtney and others of you, you know, when you didn't just suddenly decide you were going to pick up a guitar and start to play. It took you years. You know, you have to practice, and you practice each week to do it. It's like, for those of you, you know, sport, it doesn't really show, and it will never show. I used to spend hours practicing keepy uppies. And we had a blank wall on the end of our house. And I'm predominantly right-footed. And I would practice for hours taking penalties against the wall with my left foot. Hours and hours and hours. It drives my mum crazy inside. Loom, boom, boom, boom. The ball going on the end of the house. Now, I'm not saying I got good, but I got better than I would have been otherwise. It was just practice. We played table tennis the other week. Someone ended up winning. Now, I'm not saying I'm good. Get me, don't hear me wrong. But I have to admit, I spent hours in my bedroom. This is the other thing that used to wind them up. Just practicing. In our spiritual lives, if we want to be ready for the game, we've got to practice. If we're going to be ready for the crisis, we need to have built the disciplines into our lives. Disciplines. I hope you can see that. They're quite small. Discipline in our devotional life. Reading the Bible. Praying. I'm not going to say that you've got to read your Bible every day. It's good if you can. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I don't want people going out thinking, oh, God's going to smite me because I didn't read my Bible this morning. I didn't have my quiet time this morning. If you can get that, build that time in, then do. It's a really good discipline. But whatever you do, don't leave it weeks in between the times that you pray. The more you can build it in, the better. If you can take some time out every day, great. It's a really good thing to do because you'll read the Bible. You'll get to know it. Spend your time in prayer. Take some time out. I would say take time every day to pray. However you do it, however long you do it, take some time, but discipline yourself. Discipline yourself in terms of service and ministry. Acts of service, carve out time, devotional life. Our family life, you need to spend time with your families. Our time is rushing. I've got so much more stuff I want to say on this. But you need to be disciplined in your family life. Family life is attacked. Those of you who are younger, those of you who've got families, make sure that you spend time together. Carve it out. You will not have that time again. Spend time with your children. Spend time with each other. Quality time. And church. Discipline our church life. We need church. What God has set it up, Hebrews says about not neglecting the habit of meeting together. We need each other. You know the old image of the fire and in the coals. I don't know if you might not have an open fire, so some of you might not ever have done this, but we've got an open fire, and if you take a wood off the fire and just put it to the side, or a piece of coal and put it on the side, it will go out. Leave it on the fire around the other bits, it will burn down to nothing. See, got to be together. And that's what church is about, being together. It's about helping each other. If we stop meeting, if we don't do it regularly, if we get out of the habit of it, other things will come in the place of it. We need each other. We need to encourage each other to do our best and prioritize. So Daniel chose discipline. He was praying. He was doing the stuff before he got into the crisis. And the last one, he chose love over life. He chose to obey God. He chose to put God first in his life. I'm sure that Daniel wasn't too keen on becoming lion's lunch. But faced with the decision, do I choose God or myself? He chose God. His love and his respect for God was such. You see, love, it's not just about feelings. It's about our priorities. It's about what we'll do, what we choose. It's about respecting God. It's about honoring God. It's about obeying God. That's the essence of love. It's a big call for Daniel to say, I'm putting God first. Because he ran the risk of being killed. And we often fall at this point, don't we? When push comes to shove, it's so easy to choose ourselves. We choose what is easy. Daniel teaches us to follow Jesus, even when it's hard. We need to be realistic about it. Being a follower of Jesus will often be hard. It isn't easy. It's not meant to be easy. The rewards are out of this world, though. Don't ever forget that. Even though the discipline of going through life can be tough, we need to choose love over life, which is what he did. We're going to come and we're going to conclude our time this morning. It's a little bit longer as it usually is when we're doing communion, but we're going to conclude our time around the table this morning, the Lord's table. We're going to remember Jesus and his death for us. I want to encourage us this morning to use these last few moments, this last few time of our service, to ask ourselves the question, how much do we love Jesus? How much do you love Jesus? Don't think about other people, think about yourself. Is my love for Jesus more important to me than my ambitions, than my family, than what other people think about me? Is he more important than my comfort? I'm going to ask the music team to come and join us. We're going to sing a song as we then move into our time of communion this morning. Some of you will be here and you've not yet made that commitment, that step of faith and trust personally in Jesus. I hope as you come along week by week, you hear enough about him and we set him out before you as being desirable above all else. This part of our service is unashamedly for those who've got to that point, who do trust Jesus, who followed him through the waters of baptism, who've been baptized as a declaration to him and to others that they love him. I'm so glad that you're here this morning, even if you haven't started to follow Jesus. And I want to encourage you, as the others of us who have made that come to that point, as we share the bread and the wine together, I want to encourage you to take these time to think about yourself, to think about your own mortality, and to use it as a point where maybe you come to Jesus and trust him for yourself. We're going to sing a song which I think captures a lot of what I've been talking about this morning, what God has spoken to us about. The words speak for themselves, so I won't give it an introduction. What gift of grace is Jesus, my Redeemer? Thanks, guys.
Gift of grace is Jesus, my Redeemer. There is no more for heaven now to give. He is my joy, my righteousness and freedom, my steadfast love, my deeper dark, but I am not poor. to follow Jesus, for he has said that he will bring me home, and day by day I know he will renew me until I stand with joy.
So I'm just going to pronounce a benediction, give you time so that you can have a coffee here before you go, and then enjoy their wedding this afternoon. If you're around and would like to come back tonight, we would love to see you as we continue in our series looking at church and God's mission on earth and how we play our part with that. It'd be great to have you come back tonight. But now, may the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ, the love of God our Father, and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with each one of you today and always. Amen. God bless you. Lovely to see you this morning. If we raise any questions, if you'd ever like someone to pray with you, seek out a Christian, seek out myself or Paul, and we'd love to do that. If not, hopefully we'll see you again sometime soon. God bless you.